was one rifle for five guys and all of that. That was nonsense. There were supply problems because no one had any idea how bloody this war would be, but all countries had supply problems. It was taken care of in a very short time. Believe it or not, the Russian economy grew during the war. Vodka sales were banned, you know, and it's to the point where, you know, the frustration gets so great. I just, you know, my biggest weakness in debate often is that I get angry because these people, you know, what they believe is so nonsensical that I can't imagine how they can't grasp it of themselves, even logically. So, you know, this is the problem that we all have, the problem that you have, the problem that we all have. And you've been able to maintain a pleasant personality. I wish I could say the same. But it's one of the reasons I'm writing on this. One of the reasons I'm interested in it is to right these wrongs. And I said I was angry when I wrote my first book. It was because I could, you know, every syllable of the average history in of Russia is nothing but storytelling. And I taught myself the language, at least how to read it. And, you know, this has been my life ever since. It's a struggle, but I wouldn't give it up for anything.
I don't think I would either. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty happy. No, I'm happy. I'm a happy individual, and I think that the truth is important. It's amazing. I was just going through your article about Rasputin, and one of your sources, Platonov, I used Oleg Platonov in a piece that I did, which was titled Rothschilds in World War II France. And he was, I think it's interesting that we both appreciate this gentleman's work.
Absolutely.
And he was a contemporary writer. And I believe that I probably included this in my book, the second book. But anyway, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, Platonov is the chairman of the Encyclopedia of Russian Civilization, which is an ongoing project. When I was at the Barnes Review, he invited me and Michael Collins Piper to go to Russia for that famous Holocaust conference.
Yes.
My passport was denied.
Wow. Actually, I wrote this chapter, but I didn't use it. But anyway, yes, Mike Piper went there, but your passport was denied?
Yeah, it's not the first time. You know, once people got wind, because I didn't have one at the time. Of course, they all had theirs already. So I applied, and this conference was kind of a big deal. And so it was a huge disappointment. I was supposed to speak at the old KGB building, of all places. And but Michael did a great job, of course. Michael Collins Piper and I were very close friends.
As Michael would, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
I miss him very much. He didn't die from any foul play.
No.
No, he didn't take care of himself, unfortunately, and I talked to him about that. I have the Friends of Michael Collins Piper thing on Facebook, which I founded because we were very close friends. Every year on my ex-wife's birthday, he would call and sing her happy birthday because he had this huge, booming Jackie Gleason voice. It was just a thing we used to do. So that was, you know, and so Platonov, he likes Stalin a bit too much for me. But, you know, he doesn't, as far as I know, there's nothing of his in English. But I'm good enough at this point where I can read it. But other than the Stalin thing, you have in Russia, you have, you know, national Bolsheviks. You have people who are pretty much national socialists on most things, except they think that they think that Stalin was one of them. And of course, I have a chapter in there saying that Stalin was not an anti-Semite. He was not a nationalist. He was no different than Trotsky or Lenin in terms of ideology or policy. He just had a different context. So I disagree with him on that. But like we were saying, you know, so what? You know, that's not a big deal. No one's perfect.
Right.
Not even me, believe it or not. And so, yeah, he's I don't know, I guess my passport, I don't remember if there was even a reason. This is a long time ago. Was it 2000, 2001?
Wow.
David Duke went. So, yeah, this is, you know, and I wasn't too surprised, but everyone had their passports already. For some strange reason, I didn't have one. So, but I haven't flown since 9/11, not because of any fears, because I don't want to deal with airports and I hate flying. But so, yeah, that was a big disappointment. But yes, Platonov did invite me to that. And the Encyclopedia of Russian Civilization is a huge, it's a gold mine. If you could read the language, a gold mine of revisionist information. So some people say, you know, machine translations are a problem. They're good for Romance languages, but when it has to transliterate too, it's a problem.
Right.
And that's why I do it sometimes when I'm lazy, but I realize that, no, it's just, you know, you're going to end up sounding like a half-wit trying to use this stuff. And it's worse. The more obscure the language gets, the worse the machine translation gets.
Right.
So it's good for Spanish and French, but that's it, unfortunately. So I had to teach myself. When my first son was born, every word that he learned in English, I learned the Russian word, and then I taught him.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, that's how I learned.
I can't imagine.
That was fun. But then, of course, his vocabulary exploded, and I couldn't keep up. But when it first started, so he knows the language as much as I do. I can't speak it, but because you know, I don't even know how some of these things are pronounced. It's like the cooking.
Yes, my pronunciation. Now you say Platonov. How do you say it?
Platonov. Yeah, usually Platonov. Three syllables. The middle syllable is usually the one that's stressed.
Platonov. Okay, now he wrote Russia's Crown of Thorns, The Secret History of Freemasonry, 1731 to 1996. And people accused him or describe him as being an ultra-nationalist, an anti-Semitic, and a Holocaust denier. So, anyway.
Well, people throw that, you know, that's why, you know, we're going to be accused of this stuff all the time. But the thing is, anyone to the right of Trotsky gets this thrown at them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's meaningless these days. Words like racism, they don't have any definitions. You mentioned people condemning nationalism. You know how many times I've been in a debate with somebody, they define nationalism in the most negative possible way to suit themselves, and then pat themselves on the back and they condemn it.
Yes.
No, it has an actual definition. Please, let's use it. But it, you know, cutting through the mythology is, and you know, our jobs are not simple. We see information, we see how it's packaged, whether it be in the press or in the universities. Our job is to rip the packaging off and to see what's beneath, to take the mask off and see what that is the historian's job. That has always been the historian's job. And there's like maybe seven of us in the world who actually are doing it. And if you do your job properly, you won't be able to teach in academia. And it's not because you get up there and start talking like Alfred Rosenberg. It's because, you know, you're asking all the wrong questions, which, by the way, is a direct quote. Asking the wrong questions.
Right. What could possibly be the wrong question? That's pretty funny.
But, you know, I survived. And our people need to know this. You know, I had two little kids at the time. It was a horrible time, but you know, my wife had to work full time. I eventually got myself back on my feet again, but you know, we survived. If the family is strong, if your faith is strong, you'll get by it. It's not the worst thing that can happen. It's going to happen to pretty much all of us at one time or another. Those who don't use their real name, they're going to get doxxed. And remember, it's not the end of the world. You will survive it. If I could survive it, you guys can survive it. And it's been a big issue at Radio Aryan, and it's a continuing issue. There's going to be a point where we can't hide behind pseudonyms anymore. And it's a shame, but that's how it's going to be. But it's not the end of the world when that happens. If I could do it, anyone can do it.
And you sacrificed quite a lot, given the things that you presented in your acknowledgments. And I'm sorry that that happened. It's the loss was undoubtedly a very severe, and you got sick. And speaking of illness, you mentioned that you had been ill, and I've been doing a lot of reading on various topics lately, and a woman by the name of Carolyn Miss, M-Y-S-S, made a statement that I think is very applicable here, and that is your biography is your biology. And we often, when something dreadful happens to us, we're under a great deal of stress, our body is going to get sick. In fact, 95% of all illnesses are due to stress. And so you indicated that you had not been feeling well, and you've been under a lot of people in this country have been under a great deal of stress because of the weather, because of the losses due to the weather and other seemingly natural circumstances. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out.
Well, no, I appreciate that. You know, I'm an empath as well. And empaths have a tendency to attract narcissists. And unfortunately,
that's
almost a universal constant.
Really?
For some reason. And I suffered with it, textbook. And, you know, going through the divorce in 2014 was the worst thing that ever happened to me. Not so much because of her, but because of, you know, the children. The kids were teenagers. They weren't babies. But, you know, they sided with me because it was very, very clear what the problem was. I didn't want them to choose sides, but she forced them to. And, you know, but I survived. I got through it. She had to pay me quite a bit of money back then to get rid of me. So I kind of, you know, to the extent you could win a divorce, I wanted, and one of the reasons I did so well with the litigation, because I insisted we go in front of a judge, was that I fired my lawyer. And I did everything pro se.
Oh.
So she's bleeding white, paying an expensive attorney, and I'm by myself. And, you know, who knows your family better than you do? So, you know, but I dropped out of, I mean, I was writing, but I dropped out of activism for a while. And actually it was Matthew Heinbeck and Matt Parrott that contacted me saying, you need to get back into this again. We'll give you a website. We'll give you whatever you need to get started again. I said, who the hell is this? And they said, oh, well, we have this little group called Traditionalist Workers Party. We're big fans of yours. Please get back on the air again. And that was in, I know, 2015. And I said, all right. And so they lit the fire under me to get me going again. So the site and being connected with Sven Longshanks at Radio Aryan, which used to be part of Daily Stormer, you know, that was all done by them.
And wow.
So I lost everything. I lost so much back then, but then I gained my fans, followers, supporters. I've met a lot of movement people out here, and they've taken care of me. Like, for example, in Charlottesville, I was hit by a chemical attack from Antifa, and I was blind for 3 days.
Oh, my gosh.
You didn't
know
that?
No, I did not know that.
And I went down, and I'm kind of an elder statesman to a lot of the guys there. They formed a protective cordon around me to make sure that no one else got to me while I was, you know, because there was bear mace. It was a gel that's designed to stick to the cornea.
Wow.
So I had to go to the hospital and everything else. It was worth it. It was worth every second of it. But that was quite uncomfortable.
Yes.
But I saw, you know, and that happened. And these other guys who've gone to jail for allegedly, you know, hurting people. Antifa has been attacking us for decades. They came to that thing threatening to kill us. And we defended ourselves. And you know, no one, you know, the press hasn't been too interested in my story. But the point is that the brotherhood, you know, was there. My son was there as well. And he was a medic because he was a lifeguard.
Oh,
this kid didn't flinch. He must have helped about 100 of our guys. We had 2,500 guys there. The biggest.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Oh, yeah. We outnumbered them all the time. Of course, those days are over now.
Yes.
But he with this, you know, he went from guy to guy, was helping with the chemicals, really brought us down and knocked out half our guys. And he didn't flinch. They're still talking about him. He was just a young guy at the time. But so, you know, there are, I mean, you say you're happy. I think the word is we're content.
You know, right.
Deanna, let me ask you: what would you, if the world were sane, if the U.S. were a relatively healthy society, what would you be doing?
Gosh. What would I be doing? I would be writing about something else.
So you'd still be a writer?
Yes, I would still be a writer because I love books. I absolutely love books. They are my very favorite method of learning things. And I have a huge library, and I also belong to an entity called Questia, where I can, I have a subscription to Questia. I have had for a number of years, where you don't have to buy all the books that you look at or that you read. They have a huge collection of books that you can read and add them to your collection and to categorize them. And then I have a lot of books on Kindle. I think I'm up to like 400 books on Kindle, pretty close to 400, plus the regular hard stuff that I have. But I would still be writing. It would just be about a different topic, a different something. You said something that I hadn't thought of. You said that empaths are naturally attracted to narcissistic people.
Or that we attract narcissistic people, yeah.
Why? Oh, because we're so empathetic. And
we can see red flags. You know, I look back now and the red flags were bright neon signs. But I didn't see. I made excuses.
That's right.
And this is so common. We try to, you know, she went through such and such as a girl. And you know, I made every excuse possible. And we get, you know, in general, I mean, I've heard it so many times that we you know, being an empath is awful. You know, because we want to fix people and you know, everything else. Anyway, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
And we're always, we don't fix ourselves sometimes. Because we're so busy helping, right. Not fixing, but helping or assisting or, yeah.
And wow. That's taken as weakness. That's taken as that you could be taken advantage
of. A pushover.
Yeah. But speaking of books, you know, the biggest problems I have with a lot of people, not just on our side, but in general, is we live in an era of, you know, general relativism. And if truth in most things is relative, then why would you ever study anything? Why would you ever put the effort in to learn about something if it doesn't matter, if truth is relative? And I try to tell the young guys, you mentioned all your books. I said you take a small issue area in politics, say, I don't know, Social Security or Medicare. It would take you probably a decade to get through all the written material on that. To master it, to know the policy, where it comes from, all the legal decisions, everything else. Just on that tiny little area, it would take you a very long time to master the literature. You know, and I've done that in my field. And I get angry when someone who doesn't know anything or wouldn't even know how to do anything wants to lecture me on it. So you don't even know where to go. Nor don't you know the facts. You don't know where to go to find the facts.
Exactly.
It's a sin to me.
Yes.
So we have to specialize. And, you know, when you specialize, you realize that when you get deeper into a subject matter, just how wrong most people are. The deeper and deeper you get, you realize, and you know, and it's going to take, it's a lifetime of work. It's Russia stuff with me. It's a million lifetimes of work just on that. And people just need to be humble and realize that, you know, unless you've gone through this amount of work, you really don't know anything. But that's hard to tell somebody without sounding like a jerk. What do you do? So now I don't care. I just tell them anyway.
Sure.
And come off sounding arrogant that way. But, you know, you put the work in. Politics, political science, international political economy, these are technical fields.
Right.
There are thousands of papers published every week, academic papers.
Right.
You know, we have to master. And it's a lot of work, and people need to know.
It is a lot of work. Okay, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
We're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good.
All righty, we are back. We are back with our today, Dr. Matthew Johnson. His website is rusjournal.org. I just want to tell one little quick thing. When I was 14, I was living in Sacramento, California, grew up in California, and I always used to take the bus downtown, and I had a favorite shop that I used to go to, and I found a first edition of Anna Karenina. Anna, I can never say that, her second name, Karenina, Anna Karenina. And I was looking for it the other day. I know it's on one of my bookshelves. But anyway, I just thought I would share that. So my fascination with Russia began pretty early. But let's get into your book. Let's get into your latest work.
Well, I still can't remember if this is my ninth, eighth, whatever book it is. My book on Vladimir Putin is actually my bestseller. I do have a book on Russian literature, actually, from quite a while ago. Everything has been on Russian history and Soviet history has been my entire career. And I realized that you need to be able to read the language to do it. Because when you learn, so much is censored, as you well know. Mm-hmm. So much is said. You know, it's not the government. Private sector is doing all the censoring. Publishers and everything else. Tech companies. There's a whole new world out there. My ideological view was so, you know, just ripped wide open. Because now I could read these guys that Americans have never heard of before. Oleg Platonov being one. And what's taken for granted there in Russia today, you know, anti-Jewish thing, is that's mainstream. That's a normal, you know, they may say that on the floor of the Duma. I mean, it's not here, it's on the margins, but there, I remember the story when the CIA was putting together the Democratic Coalition in Ukraine back in 2004, and they had all the parties together, and all the liberal parties together, which total probably could poll about 7%, 7-8%. And CIA guy or USAID guy said, okay, I want you guys to reduce your platform to one small page, just for the voters can read it and understand. And it took a while for them to do that because they were very different parties. And it's a true story. And the US CIA guy got the platform. It was one sentence. It was to deport the Jews to Israel. Now, these are liberal parties. You know, it's just something that is so common and ordinary there. And people don't understand that. I've done a podcast, I've done radio shows, I've an article out on the so-called Holocaust denial law, which does not exist in Russia. There is a law against extremism, but Roman Ushkov was just acquitted because the Shabbat sect in Perm, in the Urals, tried to use this law against the defamation of the Russian state, so to speak, which was a Medvedev law, that, you know, anti-Semitism should be illegal. And he had mentioned, you know, talking about Nuremberg, what a fraud it was and all this stuff. And he was acquitted. And it was very clear the judiciary, with the support of the state, said there is nothing in actual legitimate historical scholarship that could be banned by the state or even by the private sector. So that's something I wanted to get out of the way right away. There is no Holocaust denial law in Russia. It is a day-to-day normal thing to deny Jewish claims there. In America, Jews go to the president as his, you know, or politicians in general, as their masters. In Russia, they go to Putin because they're worried. They go as suppliants. He's the most popular man, one of the most popular men in the world, certainly the most popular man in Russia. They realize they have to watch themselves. And I think the big difference, and it kind of sums up a lot of what I've been doing recently, in the Western world, organized capital controls politicians. The banks finance our debt, and the government couldn't function for 2 minutes without the banks. So clearly, private capital is far more powerful than the state. That is not the case in the East. In Russia, China, Belarus, the state is more powerful than capital. I don't know if you've ever seen the YouTube video of Putin coming into Oleg Deripaska's boardroom meeting. He was one of these Jewish oligarchs, big aluminum firm, was going to leave and leave Russia and open up in Central Asia for cheaper wages. And he went in there, sat at the head of the table, and forced everyone to sign a contract saying that they would never leave Russia. And just to show his superiority, when Oleg Deripaska, again, the guy's worth like $50 billion, signed, like a little kid, Putin says, "Give me back my pen." Just as a way to jab him one last time, showing him who matters. He's done this. There was a medical supply firm that was accused of selling defective products, which could be very dangerous. Wait, talk about it later.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Reaching for a dream of me.
All right, welcome back. Our guest, Dr. Matthew Johnson. His website is rusjournal.org, and we've all heard negative things about, well, recently it's been how Russia colluded with Trump in the election, and I'm thinking this is so ridiculous given the number of elections that the U.S. has taken over in other countries. It just makes me sick.
But you know, it's a backhanded compliment to Putin, because you know, 1997, Russia was disappearing.
Right,
the military had fallen apart. There was no economy. It couldn't pay its debts. And here, just, you know, a few years later, because of one man, they're now this powerful that they can control elections. Of course, you know, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever, I think in my career, 30 years now, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. These people control the universities and the newspapers, and this is what they come up with? And, you know, and it's absurd on so many levels, I don't even know where to begin. The claim, you know, I've read the NSA report on this. It has nothing to do with coming into any computer. We say hacking. Usually you think of breaking into a computer, bypassing security system, et cetera. But that's not what it is. The thing is that there's too many pro-Russian media outlets in America, and they had a tendency to be anti-Clinton. That was the whole thing. It was that, you know, you have Russian-owned media in America. That was the problem. That's what hacking is. They didn't say anything about computers. The closest thing they ever got was in the Democratic National Committee, where Hillary Clinton tried to, you know, use that Russia argument during the primary. Mm-hmm. But it had nothing to do with the general election.
And she should talk.
Right. Well, you know, what was happening with the DNC is that she was she created a situation where if you donated money to the DNC, it was funneled to her.
Right.
It was two very different things. And Democrats weren't too happy with her. They wanted Bernie. I think a lot of them wanted Bernie. I certainly respect him more than I do Hillary. And you know, they were going to stay home. They didn't want Hillary. And that was where the fraud clearly came from her. Most Democrats were aware of it. And Bernie supporters certainly know that. So the Russia story was a way to cover that over. You know, I discovered a law of social science. I named it after myself. It's called Johnson's Law. Johnson's Law says this. The more obscure a country or an issue, the farther it is away from our day-to-day experience, the more the press can lie about it. Either they're lying deliberately, or they just don't know anything, because there's so few people to correct them, they know they can get away with it. Mm-hmm. Russia is, and this is a law, it's absolutely true. Because Russia, most people don't know the first thing about the country, they could pretty much say anything, and there's not a lot of people who are going to correct them on it. I mean, North Korea is the most extreme issue. No one knows anything what's happening there. There is no communication. So all these documentaries and stuff like that are, you know, they're extrapolations. They're speculation. But Johnson's Law, you know, I see it every day. And it's because no one knows the first thing about Russian politics or Russian history. That becomes the boogeyman. Remember, when the USSR existed, there were no sanctions on that country. The USA traded with the Soviet Union from the day it was founded to the day it fell, including high-tech issues. We were training Russian scientists. We were training them in weapon systems. I mean, you know, Anthony Sutton has been through this in volume after volume after volume.
Right.
There was no, you know, the Cold War is largely mythical. The empire got too big, that's for sure. But that had nothing to do with Bolshevism, which most people in government couldn't define if their lives depended on it. The Cold War is largely mythical. Only when a nationalist gets into power, now Russia's the root of all evil. This is completely different. No Soviet dictator was ever treated as badly as Putin, who's not a dictator. So people referring to this as a new Cold War, there wasn't an old one. The U.S. was not opposed to Bolshevism or Marxism in any way, shape, manner, or form. They were opposed to the Russian Empire getting so big that they could have trading deals to keep the Americans out. That might be a problem. But ideologically or diplomatically, there was no issue there. The U.S. traded and spent a fortune in that country. Part of my book explains at length, which Anthony Sutton has done far better than me, the U.S. and Western Europe built the USSR. There could be no question about this. Anthony Sutton has the internal documents from the companies that did it. Henry Ford built their first truck plant in eastern Ukraine in 1936, I think, in Kharkiv, and created their entire automotive industry came from that. GE laid out their electrical grid. The Rockefellers, their oil. There's a mining company from Alaska. They're huge mining in the Urals. By the end of the Civil War in Russia, their intellectuals, their engineers were either dead, underground, in prison, or exiled. But they sent an army of new people to the U.S. to be trained, and they came back and ran the economy. So the Cold War, you know, that's not an enemy. The only enemy, all of a sudden, Putin, a nationalist, an orthodox man, comes to power. All of a sudden, Russia is now evil. All of a sudden, the KGB is terrible in the minds of people who were apologizing for it years ago. So,
right. And that's one of the things that you hear is that, oh, but he was a former member of the KGB. Well, so was George H.W. Bush. He was, in fact, the head of the CIA, which is a corollary to the KGB. And nobody says, oh, gosh, George H.W. Bush was this and this. And speaking of the Bushes, Didn't they have something to do with the takedown of Russia? And didn't they profit? Didn't they profit militarily? With there was some Project Hammer program that they invested, and there was also the several companies in the United States profited when Russia supposedly fell, like Halliburton. Halliburton was there, and they took over certain oil companies and whatnot. Isn't that right?
Sort of. I mean, by the 1970s, the Soviet economy was spent. The capital was getting old. It was depreciating rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
This is why the Jews wanted to leave, and the whole Jackson-Vanik Amendment issue came up and go to Israel. There was no more profit to be made. They never made the shift from heavy industry to light industry. And you had a huge bureaucracy that wanted the heavy industry to be dominant, but didn't have the money to retool all of the capital, all the infrastructure. And so we could see that was creaking. Now, no one in the West said that, but now we know this. And, you know, the ideology was failing. You know, people went into the KGB at the time because they were patriots, so-called Soviet patriots.
Mm.
People didn't know the first thing about Marxism. You know, Marxism is only important in American universities. That's pretty much it. These people didn't know a damn thing. They were Russians, and they saw their jobs as support. And this is something that Americans need to realize: this national Bolshevik movement, where you have people who talk just like us, except there's a hammer and sickle on the newspaper headline, and it might throw you for a little bit. What the hell's the matter? But remember, they see that as a national signal, symbol, not a Marxist one. They see it as a national. That's what Platonov was, one of these guys that Stalin was the Russian Hitler, which is not true, but it throws people. The Communist Party, the Soviet Union today, I'm sorry, the Communist Party of the Russian Federation today is a national socialist, is a pan-Slavic party. It's one of the most conservative parties in the country.
Wow.
And that shift just was to move from – and again, by the 1970s, no one cared. No one read Marx anymore. You know, under Brezhnev, there was no ideological fervor. So if you were going to join the security services, you were doing it because you were a patriot. You know, same thing for members of the army or anything like that.
Okay.
So that's the story. Putin was – and the story I was telling before the break – is connected to this, because the point I was making, that in the West, politicians are controlled by big money. In Russia, Putin is stronger than big money. And he can tell them what to do. And this is why the Russian economy has done so much better than the Americans. The Russian economy is not based on oil. Only about 7% of its GDP comes from oil-related things. Its exports are much higher, but a lot of lazy people want to claim that oil prices dictate the Russian economy, which is not true. And Putin took it from a fourth world backwater, which is what it was in 1998, to the sixth largest economy in the world in, 8 years? You know, there's no long-term debt. You have the flat tax, the 13% flat tax. You have a far more conservative in every respect. Of course, the old scars still remain. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the economy is far more rational than anything in the West. People are far happier than in the West. Not everybody is on antidepressants and Adderall in Russia, unlike the West. And so I've always thought that there was a lot of resentment for him because he's so popular that they would love to have that. And of course, his image is also very, very powerful. And they would love to have that. And they don't. So, you know, Vladimir Putin is one of the great men of our time. And he should be treated that way. And he has been an opponent of Israel. He's armed Iraq before the war, Syria, of course, intervened in Syria, and is now intervening in Venezuela. Because, of course, as you know, the U.S. has ringed that country with bases and allies, overthrowing right. the pro-Russian governments in Central Asia, in Georgia, in Ukraine, violently in 2014. So, you know, that was the point I was trying to make before. But the two systems, really, it's simplistic, but who rules what? The common good, the state is more powerful than capital in Russia. In the U.S., capital or individual ego controls the state. And that's a big difference between the two.
That's interesting. It is also amazing that when some people in the alternative movement saw that Putin was so popular, they thought that somehow that was going to help us. But I don't see how that could be a benefit to us.
Well, I need to make something very, very clear. I was the very first guy to say that Putin was a nationalist back in 2000 when he was first elected. I was working for Willis Cardo. I was attacked by everyone, including them. I was called everything. Oh, he's a communist now, KGB, whatever. I converted Mike Piper and Willis Cardo when they began seeing his policies. They then went out and started converting other people. I was the first one to make it very clear that Putin is anti-globalist, he's a nationalist, he's a Christian, he's one of us in almost every way. Not in every way, but almost every way. I was all alone. So, and trust me, I was all alone. Now, it's taken for granted, and to the point where the regime is angry that Putin didn't want Hillary as president. You know, so I take responsibility for that. I was the first one to do that, and I paid a dear price at the time for it. But some of these people who attacked me back in 2000 now are acting like it never happened. But, you know, I guess I take it as a compliment.
Wow.
That was me.
Now, he has been the president of Russia for how long? Since 98?
96? New Year's Eve, 1999, 2000. And then, of course, Medvedev was president for a while. The Russian population was asked, this was about 5 years ago. The question was, if the Constitution had to be violated in order for Putin to be president longer, do you want that? And it's like 75% said yes.
Oh my goodness.
So he's you know, amongst Russian polls, and these are not just in Russia, but they're in Poland and Ukraine and sometimes hostile countries. His popularity rating rarely goes under 75%. And it goes up and down depending on economic factors. But after the civil war in Ukraine, the Crimea issue, it was over 90%, believe it or not. You had a lot of very, very jealous politicians in the West. And the reason I gave to you before is that the common good rules capital as much as humanly possible in that country. And a country so big is the reason. The economy is simply more rational. We would do better there than here. And I would really be there if I didn't have kids and if my spoken Russian were better. Everyone who I know there who's emigrated says it's far better in almost every way. It is now so the left sees the U.S. military as a leftist force to promote globalism, which it is. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And
always
that's a big issue of mine. And so that's, you know, to put it in simplistic terms, that's what makes Putin different in the East. And I think the Chinese have somewhat of a similar situation. But in the Russian case, you know, he embarrasses the West because he is so popular. And he's popular because he rejects the West and threw the IMF out of his country in 2001. And it drives them insane. He paid his debt off early. They didn't want him to do it. They said, oh, no, we need that interest. He paid it off anyway. But Moody's still downgraded Russian bonds. He paid the long-term debt off early in 2002 or 3. And Moody's still downgraded his bonds. And he paid them off early anyway, then threw the IMF out. Very few people can claim that. So, you know, that's the reason he's popular, because he's delivered the goods. He took a fourth world country and made it into a first world country in 5-8 years. And it's only been done a handful of times. Hitler's done it. Park Chung-hee in South Korea has done it. Chiang Kai-shek in Taiwan has done it. And Putin's done it. That's about it. It's an extraordinary achievement.
Wow. Now, somebody in the chat room wants to know, Matt, did you say Peter the Great was a communist? I don't think you said that.
I would never say that.
No.
Communism didn't exist really ideologically at the time. I did say that his persecution of the church made him a proto-Bolshevik. I did say that.
Oh, okay.
So that's explaining, you know, see how these things get filtered over time, you know?
Sure. Sure. All righty, we're going to take a quick break. And we will take your phone calls in the next hour at 800-313-9443. Be right back.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth. Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
And guest today is Dr. Matthew Johnson. His website is rusjournal.org. And you were talking about all of the good things that Putin has done for Russia. Do you think that he's, and you think that he's the real deal? And I have people in, well, I have a person in Russia that I've communicated with over a period of time that says some of the same people run things in Russia just as they do here?
The same individuals?
No, the same ethnic group.
Well, you know, there's only a handful of Jews left in Russia. There are, I think, you know, 0.1% of the population.
Oh.
Locally, you know, in places like Perm, where I was talking about, groups like Chabad have done very, very well.
Oh, the Chabad Lubavitchers?
Or? Yeah, the real extremist sect. And you know, the federal government backed the actions against them concerning the so-called Holocaust denial case. With you know, again, there's no law like that. You know, the extremist law that this was based on has been overturned, but it had nothing to do with the Holocaust anyway.
Oh.
It was the only World War II law that was condemned by the U.S. And of course, you know, Putin's movement was a revolution, but you can't replace every single individual at every local level, and which is the reason why Putin
had sure.
federalize and appoint, with state legislature's opinion, local governors. And that was because the same people were running it there and were essentially putting their own people in charge. And okay. Putin took a lot of heat for that from the West. As it turns out, the West actually said for Yeltsin to do the same thing. So, but the U.S. government was connected with the Jewish oligarchs and organized crime figures, and there's really no difference between the two in Russia, right? You know, throughout the 1990s. And in the lawsuit, the federal government against Harvard University, that all came out, which is a whole separate issue. They shut down part of the economics department there because of their extreme corrupt dealings in Russia, and the federal government won. So, yeah, you're always going to have, you know, imperfections and all these problems everywhere. It's never going to be perfect. Putin is not a dictator. He's far from perfect, but he's infinitely better than what we have here. But he is most certainly a great man.
Do you see Trump as being a nationalist?
I'm not entirely sure what Trump is doing. You know, I remember when he first hit it big when I was a kid, he was as apolitical as you can get. He's in way over his head. I feel bad for the guy. I think he wanted to be one when he first started, but he's all alone, as we said before. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have never seen a man treated by the press like he's been.
And you have to ask why, for certain.
That's
all righty. My goodness. Okay, we're at the top of the hour, and we do have some callers lining up. So anyway, we'll be right back.
Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to libertystickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's libertystickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.